Would like to welcome you to the Delray Church of Christ. As Michael said this morning, Brother Doug is away this morning preaching a gospel meeting up in Winfield, Alabama. If you're visiting, I would encourage you to come back any opportunity that you have and hear the real preacher instead of me. When Steve asked me to do this several weeks ago, I got to thinking, well, what am I going to preach on? And for any of you that know and have been in any of my classes, you know that I try to prepare and do a lot of preparation, and I do agonize over what I want to say and preach and teach. And I happened to be flipping through the channels the other day when the soccer match was on, and I came across another station, and there was a preacher on there. And he started off by saying, "Cleanliness is next to godliness." And I thought, hey, that might work. That might be a pretty good one. And I appreciate Steve leading the songs this morning about needing God and Jesus in our life. And I got to thinking a little bit more about that. And it's been several weeks ago. Well, I got busy, got to traveling, had to go see my folks in Arkansas and check on them. A wedding coming up and visiting over in Georgia. And I kept thinking about that. Cleanliness is next to godliness. And then I got to noticing how nasty the bathrooms were when you had to stop along the way. Have y'all ever noticed that? You're on vacation and you hear from the back seat, "I gotta go." So you think you find a reputable place to go to that would have a nice, clean bathroom. Y'all remember the Texaco commercials? The Texaco Star? They used to pride themselves on having clean facilities. Not anymore. I love to go to these bathrooms, and as you're walking out, they have this little check sheet listed on the back. You all ever noticed them? They've got a date and a time when it's been last checked. It is 11:05, and you notice that 11 o'clock was the last time this place was checked. It is nasty. There is everything everywhere. But I love what it says right down at the very bottom. In the fine print it says, "If this facility needs cleaning, please let management know." You can't find them if you want to tell them that. But I got to thinking about that particular one. Not so much cleanliness is next to godliness. Have you ever thought about that? What does that mean? Anyway, when do we normally hear cleanliness is next to godliness? My parents used to say it all the time. Cleanliness is next to godliness. Clean up this room. Haven't you heard that? Young folks, cleanliness is next to godliness. Clean up your room. Several quarters ago, I was teaching on the parables of Jesus in the baby boomers class. And I remember one parable. It's a very short parable, and that's the one I'd like to look at this morning. And it's talking about getting clean and staying clean. If you've got your Bibles, I'd like for you to turn, if you've got, to Luke chapter 11. Luke chapter 11. Verses 24 through 26. And keep in mind all of the little stuff we've been talking about. Cleanliness is next to godliness. If this facility needs cleaning, let management know. That's the one that I am more interested in this morning. Luke chapter 11, verse 24 and 26 says this. "When an evil or unclean spirit comes out of a man, it goes through arid places seeking rest and does not find it. Then it says, 'I will return to the house that I left.' When it arrives, it finds the house swept clean and put in order. Then it goes and takes several other spirits, more wicked than itself, and they go in and live there. And the final condition of that man is worse than the first." Look at what this short parable talks about. We don't know a whole lot about this man other than he must have had some redeeming factors because Jesus mentions him. He says this unclean man here, when this evil or unclean spirit comes out of the man, that's all we know about him. He had an unclean or an evil spirit living in him, and it was cast out. He's tired of this demon. He's tired of this sin. He's tired of whatever this is in his life, and he casts it out. But look what happens. This unclean spirit can't find any rest anyplace, and he comes back. Look at what it says there. The unclean spirit says, I will return to the house that I left. And when he arrives, he finds the house swept clean and put in order. You know why the unclean spirit came back? Because he found an empty house. He found that it had been straightened out and put in place. And what does he do? Not only does the unclean spirit comes back, he brings seven of his buddies with him. Hey, this is great. Look, we got a clean house. Let's move back in. The man wasn't able to stay clean, was he? These demons, these evil spirits that we see in the New Testament, they are real. Jesus acknowledged that demons existed. In the New Testament, we're warned about demons and evil spirits and the evil forces that are in this world, that are out there every day that we have to deal with. So that's why I enjoyed reading this parable and looking at it. And this morning, I'd like to make three points dealing with these first two verses. Point number one, if you're going to clean up a mess in your life, the first thing you have to do is confess the mess. The first thing that you've got to do is realize that you have a problem that you've got to deal with. As we look around us today and look at this, somewhere along the line, this man must have realized that he had a problem. He was honest enough to finally realize that I need to do better. I need to get rid of this. And the same thing occurs in your and my lives. Unless we come to terms that we have problems that we're dealing with on a daily basis, we need to clean up our own lives. We need to look at them. You see, in order to clean up a mess, you've got to be able to confess it first. I used to deal with drug and alcohol rehabilitation in the military and the government. One of the things that I tried to do was to help folks that were dealing with problems. Alcoholics Anonymous always starts out their meetings by, when they introduce themselves, they say hi, state their name, and then they confess that I'm an alcoholic. The same thing happens in drug rehab. They identify themselves, state that they have a problem, and then they move on. That's what we need to do in our lives. We need to come to terms that we have a problem that we need to deal with. We have sin in our lives that we need to deal with. We have demons that are after us every day. But we don't do that. We hide them. We hide those things in our lives that we're dealing with because we don't want anybody to know about them. We have become experts at hiding things from each other, even our own selves sometimes. I don't have a problem. No, I'm fine. Trust me. Proverbs 28, verse 13 says, He who conceals his sins does not prosper, but whoever confesses and renounces them finds mercy. We don't get anywhere by hiding our sins, but we're into appearances. We have to put on airs. We don't want anybody to know. What would the neighbors think if they found out? What would our brother and sister on the end of the pew think of us if they found out we had a problem like that? We're not willing to come clean. And what happens is those demons and those sins that we're dealing with in our lives continue to have power over us because we won't confront them. We have an example in the Old Testament of David, a man after God's own heart. was dealing with his own demons, the demons of lust and the demon of power. He had the demons of lust and power in his life that ultimately led to adultery with Bathsheba, an act which affected his family for generations. And when David was confronted about his sins, he penned an outstanding confession in Psalms 51. If you would, I would encourage you to switch over to Psalms 51 and let's read it together. Psalms 51, verses 1 and 3. David pens these words and says, "Have mercy on me, O God, according to your unfailing love, according to your great compassion. Blot out my transgressions, wash away my iniquity, and cleanse me from my sin. For I know my transgressions, and my sin is always before me." I love another translation of verse 3, which puts it in our vernacular of the day. It says, "I know how bad I've been. My sins are staring me down." You see, it was only then that David came to the realization that he had sin in his life, that he confessed, and upon that confession, he became and found mercy once again. David confessed the mess in his life. Now, I don't know what demons you're dealing with this morning, but I know some of the demons that I'm dealing with. Some of the demons that we may all be dealing with is our temper. Some of our demons may be dealing with anger. Maybe it's an addiction of some sort. Pills, alcohol, pornography, drugs, whatever the case is. Gluttony, lack of self-control, a low self-esteem. Depression, thoughts of suicide. Some fear or excess worry that you've got in your life, whatever it is, until you and I are willing to face those sins and demons head on in our lives, we're not going to get anywhere. 1 John 1:9 tells us that if we confess our sins, he is faithful and righteous to forgive us of our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. You need to notify management that there's a problem. We need to confess the mess in our lives. I went out and got the newspaper this morning, and I love to get the Sunday paper. I love to grab it, and the first section that I go to is the funny papers. I don't care what's on the headlines. I've already seen that on the news last night. I go to the funny papers. Are they still called the funny papers? Maybe it's the cartoons or comics. But anyway, there was a good one in there this morning. This is from Better or Worse. This is a family. And you see the mother looking at the husband laying on the couch, the kids in the floor with a mess, dogs chewing on a bone, and it's just nasty. And she notices and says, "What a dump." And she says, "Oh, guys, okay, guys, head for the hills. I'm going to use a shovel and clean this place out." And you see the dad taking the kids off and says, "Okay, let's clear the place. Let's get out." And you see her cleaning in the next one with a vacuum and then sweeping and dusting and mopping and doing all this. And later the kids come home and the dad comes home and says, "We're home." And then the next one you say, the mother says, "There is no justice." She says, "It takes half a day to clean up the house and only 60 seconds to mess it up again." And that brings me to my second point. It's hard to keep a clean house clean. Isn't that the truth? Haven't y'all done that? Y'all got company coming. You take a half a day to clean the house up. You put the dishes in the dishwasher, and all of a sudden there's a glass that shows up on the counter. Where'd that come from? You just get the kitchen floor mopped and you drop a tomato. I love the comics once again. There's another one that I faithfully read called Family Circus. It's the little circle one up there. And they will always ask, "Who did this?" And there's this little ghost character that says, "Not me." That's his name, not me. when they asked the kids, who made this mess? You see the little ghost figure running away. Not me. That's what happens in our lives. We didn't do that. It's tough to keep a clean house clean. Let's go back to the verses that we're looking at this morning. You see that the demon came back and found the house swept and put in order. Just like it's hard for us to keep our physical house clean, we also have the same problem keeping our spiritual life clean. You try so hard. You're trying to do your best to do things around the house. You're trying to do things at your work. You're trying to balance all these things and still try to be a good Christian. And what happens? You find things start gnawing at you. You start letting things bother you again. You start missing a service here and there. Nobody's going to matter. Nobody's going to miss me. And then what happens? You miss Wednesday night. You miss Sunday morning. You miss a month. And the next thing you know, that demon that you drove out is now back with seven of his buddies, and they have taken up residence at your house once again. But you say, I'm going to do better. I'm going to do better. Trust me. How many of you 7 months ago made New Year's resolutions? How many of you kept them? You know what the number one resolution every year is? I'm going on a diet. I'm going to lose weight. I kept that one for about a week. And then I tried again a couple of months later. I said, I can do this. No, you can't. You know what happens? You go out to eat, or you get invited over for dinner, and they serve your favorite meal, and they serve your favorite dessert that you have been avoiding for all this many times. Oh, no, no, I can't. Oh, just have one little sliver. It'll be all right. And when you put it in your mouth, you know what happens? It tastes so good. Oh, it tastes so good. And the next thing you know, you've eaten the whole pie. Or you've eaten that whole half gallon of ice cream because it was on sale at Publix. Isn't that the truth? Isn't that what happens to us? Same thing in our spiritual lives. Why do we have so many problems? The Bible tells us. Look at this story again. Look at what it says here. When the demon arrives back, it found the house clean and swept and put in order. And then it goes and takes seven more spirits, more wicked than itself, and they go in and live there. This demon is back and has brought its buddies. It's having a grand time. Why is it so hard for us? Ephesians 6, verse 12 tells us. It says, for our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. There is a power of evil in this world whose main job is to defeat us, to make us feel frustrated, to make us feel like it's no use, that it doesn't matter what we do, we're not going to make it. There is a force of evil at work amongst us every day. On another occasion, I was watching television again. I'm beginning to see a pattern here. I'm watching too much television. But it was dealing with the oil spill in the Gulf, and they were there taking the eggs of the turtles, the sea turtles that have laid the eggs there in the sand, and they were moving them. And I was on the Discovery Channel, or the Animal Planet, or one of those, and it was talking about only 1 in 2,500 baby turtles make it to full adulthood. Only 1 in 2,500. When I was a kid, we lived in Florida, and we would go to the beaches and watch the turtles lay the eggs, how they worked so hard to get up in there, lay their eggs, then go back out to the sea, and they left their eggs there for the predators. They covered them up the best they could, but there were predators there that wanted those eggs. It didn't matter. If any of the eggs were actually born, the little sea turtles would start to swim toward the water, and the seagulls would get them. If they actually made it into the water, fish would find them. If they actually made it to the deep part of the water, fishermen's nets may have caught them. Only one in 2,500 make it to full adulthood. The same thing happens in our spiritual life. Look at the Christians who we used to worship with. Look around this morning and see where they're at. There is a predator out there. We have an adversary out there whose main job is to defeat us. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. It's hard to keep your clean life clean. We work so hard. You feel like there's no use, you can't do it, but that's what the devil wants you to think. He works so hard to make you feel like you're all alone out there. He's working his evil power to tempt you, to let you fall away and tell you you can't do it. Which brings me to my third point, because there is hope. In this same short parable, there is a parallel parable of this over in Matthew. And if you would, turn over to Matthew chapter 12. And specifically in verse 24. This is a parallel account that is given here, and it's a little bit different than the account found in Luke, because Matthew adds one more word that's not found in Luke. In the vision of Luke, you find that the demon comes back and founds the house clean and put in order. In Matthew chapter 12, verse 24, it says, the house was unoccupied. It was empty. You see what happened when the man drove the demon or drove the sin out of his life? He didn't replace it with anything. The secret to staying clean? You've got to replace that sin with something that's more powerful and stronger than what you just drove out. You need to replace it with something bigger, something stronger, something more powerful. A physics class professor was asking a group of students one day, holding up an empty glass, and pointed to it and says, how do I get the air out of it? Well, this is physics 101. These folks knew everything in college. We'll build a vacuum chamber. We'll do this. We'll do that. And a young guy in the back says, why don't you just fill it up with water? You see, if you fill up an empty glass with water, you've filled it up with something more powerful, stronger than the air that's in there. The same thing in our lives. We've got to put Jesus in our life. Because if you don't, that demon or that sin's going to come back. Look at the demon again. It finds the house clean and swept and put in order and was empty. The alcoholic didn't start out to be an alcoholic when he first took that first drink. The drug addict didn't start out to be a drug addict when he took that first hit on that marijuana joint. We didn't start out to be sinners by just doing one thing. It starts with one, and then the buddies show up. It's just that easy for us to go back. You've got to replace that void in your life with Jesus. Jesus has already defeated those demons at the cross. Jesus has already defeated sin and death at the cross. Jesus is more powerful than the forces of evil that are in this world today. 1 John 4:4 tells us, "You, dear children, are from God, and you have overcome them because the one who is in you is greater than the one who is in this world." Our problem is not that we're dealing with demons with Jesus. Our problem is that we're dealing with them on our own. We're dealing with them with brain power and willpower. Well, I'm here to tell you, brain power and willpower will not overcome those demons in your lives. But you know, we act like adult two-year-olds sometime. You know what a two-year-old says? "I can do it. I don't need any help. I can do it by myself." We do the same thing sometime. We get to where we think, "I can handle it. Don't bother me." We think that our willpower and that our brain power will get us through a situation. Sometimes that just won't work, because if you allow your brain power and your willpower to continue to control your life without Jesus, you're going to be frustrated, and the devil loves it. We're in the fight of our lives. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 13 says, "Therefore, putting on the full armor of God, so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground, and after you have done everything, to stand." Another translation which I enjoy as well, it says, "Be prepared. You're up against far more than you can handle on your own. Take all the help that you can get, every weapon that God has issued, so that when it's all over but the shouting, you'll still be standing on your feet." Isn't it time for some of us to lay down that willpower and that brain power and realize that we need Jesus in our lives? Isn't it time that we come to the point that we realize that we've got a problem? But so many of us are dealing with those same old demons year after year, and it beats us down. James 4:7 says, "Submit yourselves then to God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you." Philippians 4:13 says, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." We look at verses that tell us without Jesus, without being connected where he is the vine and we're the branches, we can't handle it alone. We're going to sing a song of encouragement here in just a moment. It's called "None of Self and All of Thee." I want you to pay particular attention to the verses as we go through it. You find the arrogance at the beginning of the song where it is "none of self," where it's "none of thee and all of self." I'll get it right here in a minute. But as the song progresses, you get down to the very bottom and it says "none of self and all of thee." That's where we're at this morning. That's where the void that we've got to fill in our lives. If you're battling those same old demons, if you're battling sin in your life, you've got to come to the realization that you've got to have a desire for Christ in your life more than anything else. Isn't it time that you confess the mess in your life? Isn't it time that you want to clean up your life? Isn't it time to let Jesus into your life? Isn't it time, as together we stand and sing?